Welcome to a series of talks about objective consciousness, an objective universe, and an objective way to awaken, expanding upon the works of George I. Gurdjieff and Russell A. Smith. We have recently published the first chapter of the audiobook of The Blueprint of Consciousness in a five-part series. Today, as a special bonus, we give to you the first part of Chapter 2, The Uncreation of the Universe, where we describe the changing of the law of three and show how there are no such things as denying forces in our universe. Let's begin. The Blueprint of Consciousness, An Accelerated Path to Awakening, by Russell A. Smith. Chapter 2, The Uncreation of the Universe. Where are we? Always good to review where we are, because the journey is to know where we are, remember where we have been, and understand where we are going. We started this journey with Vincit Omnia Veritas, Truth Conquers All Things, and think we decided that if that was true, then it would be in our best interest to find the truth. The truth began with the idea that men are made in the image of God. But something in our head said, that can only be true if everything is made in the image of God. The image of God cannot be something that was just stuck in the last 1% of our genes. It must be in everything. That is, an image that worked its way up since the beginning of time into everything, in order for it to end up in us. Well, if that is true, and if it is in everything, then we should be able to find it. We saw the structure of music has notes at 24, 27, 30, 32, 36, 40, 45, and 48, and intervals of 3, 3, 2, 4, 4, 5, 3. And then, when we looked at a rainbow, we saw that the spectrum of light was also in those same proportions. Music was playing at the centers of gravity, and light was waving in the spaces in between. An axiomatic image emerged, an image that was easy to see in music, in light, and in a slinky, an image that revealed the diatonic ratios. We finished the first chapter with the Gurdjieff Treatise, where it was postulated that God was forced to create our now existing universe. A grand idea, a model that said God lived on a place called the Holy Sun Absolute, and discovered that his home was diminishing in volume, which concerned him. So, our endlessness was forced to create a world outside of the Holy Sun Absolute, in which things could independently arise and find their way back into the Holy Sun Absolute, and halt its diminishment, thus ending his concern about losing the place of his existence. We will now begin Chapter 2, The Uncreation of the Universe. Cosmic Secrets, page 14. Chapter 2 continues with the Gurdjieff Treatise. Chapter 2, The Uncreation of the Universe. Now, my boy, listen further very attentively. And so, in the beginning, as I've already told you, our most holy Sun Absolute was maintained by the help of these two primordial sacred laws. But then, these primordial laws functioned independently, without the help of any forces whatsoever coming from outside. And this system was still called only the auto-egocrat. And so, our all-maintaining endlessness decided to change the principle of the system of the functionings of both of these fundamental sacred laws. And namely, he decided to make their independent functioning dependent on forces coming from outside. And so, in consequences of the fact for this new system of functioning of the forces which until then maintained the existence of the most holy Sun Absolute, there were required outside of the Sun Absolute corresponding sources in which such forces could arise and from which they could flow into the presence of the most holy Sun Absolute. Our almighty endlessness was just then compelled to create our now existing megalocosmos, with all the cosmoses of different scales and relatively independent cosmic formations present in it. And from then on, the system which maintained the existence of the Sun Absolute began to be called Trogo-Auto-Egocrat. Our common Father Omni-Being Endlessness having decided to change the principle of the maintenance of the existence of this then still unique cosmic concentration and sole place of his most glorious being, first of all, altered the process itself of the functioning of these two primordial fundamental sacred laws, and he actualized the greater change in the law of the sacred Heptaparaparshanok. We learn from the treatise that initially the universe was governed by a system that was called the Autoegocrat. Underline that. Autoegocrat translates to myself, I maintain. Autoegocrat technically means myself, I hold. Auto, myself. Ego, I. Krato, to hold. Myself, I hold. Myself, I maintain. I maintain myself. Russell uses this model. God is living on the Holy Sun Absolute, and his one lot in life is to stoke the fire of the Holy Flame. That is his job. He has to keep the Holy Flame burning. Sounds like a pretty good job. He is immortal, living on this planet called the Holy Sun Absolute, just stoking the fire of the Holy Flame. In order to do that, he must cut down trees and throw them into the fire. When they burn, he cuts down more trees and throws them into the fire. And after doing that for billions of years, he says to himself, I know this is a big planet and there are a lot of trees, but if I am going to be here forever and I keep cutting down and consuming the trees to keep the fire going, then, oh my me, sooner or later, I am going to run out of trees. That could be a problem. Autoegocrat. I cut the trees down and keep the fire going. Myself, I maintain. But that was causing the Holy Sun Absolute to diminish in volume. And so, he had to alter the system which maintained the existence of the Holy Sun Absolute, and he changed it into what is now called the Trogo Autoegocrat. Trogo Autoegocrat translates to, I eat myself, I maintain. Trogo Autoegocrat. Trogo is I eat. Thus, I eat myself, I hold. I maintain myself by eating. I exist by consuming my creation. God said, I know what I will do. I will make the light of the Holy Flame grow trees. If the light of the Holy Flame grows trees, then I can cut them down and keep the Holy Flame going, which will grow more trees, so I can cut them down and keep the Holy Flame going. The universe got into a state of reciprocal maintenance, and the Holy Sun Absolute was elevated to the position of being eternal, unchanging. Creation itself now grew trees and kept the Holy Flame burning, which grew more trees to keep the Holy Flame burning, and thus continued creation. Therefore, our endlessness overcame his concerns regarding the Holy Sun Absolute's diminishment in volume, knowing that he would always have a place to put his rocking chair. Trogo Autoegocrat. I eat myself, I maintain. Got it? We went from a system called the Autoegocrat, myself I maintain, to a system called the Trogo Autoegocrat. I eat myself, I maintain. In Gurdjieff's model, creation involved changing the two cosmic laws, the laws that maintain the existence of the Holy Sun Absolute. But he did not tell us how they were changed, only that they were. The only clue we get is in the last paragraph on page 14 of Cosmic Secrets. He actualized the greater change in the law of the sacred Heptaparaparshanok. There was a greater change in the law of the sacred Heptaparaparshanok. At least this gives us a place to begin. Cosmic Secrets, page 15. Gurdjieff's masterful treatise of a forced need to create the universe explains why the two fundamental laws had to be changed. Most philosophic, religious, and scientific beliefs contain this idea, that at some point, a transition occurred. But Gurdjieff goes beyond, opening the possibility to actually conceive the moment of creation itself. In pursuit of this possibility, our investigations will begin with the two fundamental laws. We can observe and define these laws in their changed state, since their changed state is the present state of the universe. But what were the two laws like before they were changed? How were they changed? Which law was changed first? Why was the greater change in the law of Heptaparaparshanok? How did this changing result in the universe becoming the universe? Is it actually possible, with the information hidden by Gurdjieff, to answer these questions? The only way to find out is to uncover and assimilate the clandestine dogs buried in Gurdjieff's writings. Perhaps then, we will be able to view the universe before creation, at the moment of creation, and ultimately watch in reverence as the world begins. The changing of the law of three. The first dog that we shall try to exhume comes from Mr. Gurdjieff's teachings on triads and the aggregation of the three forces. Here, six triads, or six combinations of the three forces, are possible. The positive, negative, and neutralizing principles, or three forces, can only manifest through six triads. Then, Gurdjieff refers to a seventh triad, one that is only available to the Absolute, a triad in which the three forces are united. Gurdjieff's masterful treatise of A Force Need to Create the Universe explains why the two fundamental laws had to be changed. In most philosophic, religious, and scientific beliefs, we find similar ideas. That is, at some point, something occurred, and something got changed. In Christianity, it is, "And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, Let there be light, and there was light." Oh my God, things were one way, and then suddenly they got changed, and out of that spewed the universe. Wow. In physics, it is, "All the matter in the universe was at a point that was smaller than an atom, and for some reason it went bang. And it was a big bang." That is, there was a change, and out of that single point, as previously discussed, came matter and antimatter. Then there was a war. A primordial, universal war between matter and antimatter. However, there was a little imbalance between the two. For every billion particles of antimatter, there were 1,000,000,001 particles of matter. Thus, matter won the war, which gave us a universe filled with matter, and a scale from nothing to all. But it is still a model that says, things were one way, and then they went bang and changed. We do not know why they went bang. We only know that they did. In the Hindu religion, it is again the same idea. There was this god called Brahma, and one day he decided to breathe out the universe. That is, the universe was created from the breath of Brahma. That too was a change. Things were one way, and then they changed. In Hinduism, the change was the breath of Brahma. In physics, the change was a big bang. In Christianity, the change was the Spirit of God moving and saying, "Let there be light." So, these models all express something similar. Before creation, the system of the universe was one way, and then it changed into a new way. It is hard for us to fathom the Spirit of God moving and saying, "Let there be light." It is hard for us to fathom 200 billion galaxies, each with 200 billion stars, all made from the one survivor out of every billion particles of matter, which came from a point that had no size. How do we equate that? Well, okay, we could use Einstein's equation of E equals mc squared and say, if you can convert matter into energy, then you ought to be able to convert energy into matter. So, if there was a point that had X amount of energy, we guess we could divide that energy by the speed of light squared and end up with all the matter in the universe. Yeah, we could figure out the mathematics of that, if we knew exactly how much matter there was in the universe. But it is still hard for us to fathom. And it is harder for us to fathom the breath of Brahma. What the heck does that even smell like? Gurdjieff's creation, like the others, indicates that there was a change. A change from being the auto-egocrat to becoming the trogo-auto-egocrat. However, in Gurdjieff's model, it happened because the two great laws were changed. Which means, if we can understand the laws in their present state, that is, in their changed state, we may be able to unchange them and put them back to where they were before they were changed. Does that make any sense? If we can do that, we may be able to change them back into what they are now, thus discovering how the universe was created and watching in reverence as it all unfolds. We will begin with Gurdjieff's premise that the two fundamental laws were changed. We know what the laws look like in their changed state, since their changed state is the present state of the universe. So now, we have to figure out what the two laws looked like before they were changed. To do this, we should ask some fundamental questions. What were the two laws like before they were changed? How were they changed? Which law was changed first? Why was there a greater change in the law of seven? And how did these changes result in the universe becoming the universe? Is it actually possible to uncover the dogs buried in Gurdjieff's writings and understand this, to where we can sit back and watch the universe come into existence? We say, it is. With a little bit of common knowledge and a little bit of reason, just like the reason that said, if we are made in the image of God, then everything has to be made in the image of God, we will be able to comprehend the changes in those two great fundamental laws, and we will see how our universe began. We will begin by exploring the changing of the law of three. In chapter one, we learned that every event contains three forces. When we constructed the Enneagram of feeding the community, we saw that the three forces were the kitchen, the food, and the customer. Remember when we did that? It all made sense. Now we will discuss how the three forces interact in different ways. We shall begin with a study of triads. The universe started with a trinity of forces. And with a trinity of forces, there are only six ways in which those forces can interact. They are called triads. Question: why are there only six triads? Answer: it is the number of permutations of three things. There are only six ways to configure three forces. They can be plus minus neutral, plus neutral minus, neutral plus minus, neutral minus plus, minus neutral plus, or minus plus neutral. There are no other ways. There are only six. We repeat, there are only six ways to orient three forces. The six possible ways produce six different triads. However, on page 16 of Cosmic Secrets, Gurdjieff says, there can be seven combinations of forces, one of them incomprehensible to the human mind, since in this triad, each force occupies each place. In fact, it would look more like a dot than a triangle, because the three forces, the plus, minus, and neutral force, would all be at the same place. Put a single dot next to the triangle, and above it, put the symbols plus, minus, zero, with a line from each of those symbols pointing to the single dot, to show that in the single dot, the three forces are all at the same place. Now, that brings up an interesting idea. If our endlessness has a triad where all three forces are at the same place, and we live in a universe where the three forces are separated and can only interact via six triads, then perhaps the first act of creation involved the separation of the forces. That is, the forces that were all at the same place became forces at different places, a separation of forces. God has them all in one triad, in the same place, like in the physics model. All the matter in the universe was at a single point, smaller than an atom. But out here, in the universe where we live, the forces are separated and can only manifest via six triads. Does that idea also make sense? We went from a state of the three forces being in the same place to a state of the three forces being separated. In Russell's mind, this was the beginning of creation. It all started with the separation of forces. All forces in the same place, to all forces being separated. Bang! With three separated forces come six triads. So let us now talk about the six triads. What are they? And what does each one mean? To accomplish the event called feeding the community, we needed to use the following triad. Do equals function, kitchen, cyclical. Far equals being, food, transformed. La equals will, customer, purpose. We had to use the above triad if we wanted to have an event called feeding the community. However, if we had a different event in mind, we would have needed to use a different triad. Let's say that you lived in France during World War II, and the Nazis had invaded your country. They were raping your women, shooting your men, and taking over your nation. Maybe you would have said, "Do you know what I'm going to do? I am going to invite them all over for dinner. I'm going to make sure that we undercook the pork. And instead of transforming the food, I'm going to transform Nazis. I'm going to use the triad that irrevocably transforms the customer, and I am going to try to kill Nazis." Do you understand? Your aim was not to cook food, but to kill Nazis. So you use the triad that transforms customers from alive to dead. Or you might say, "You know, my wife and I are doing poorly. Life is not going very well. We are falling behind on our bills. The credit card debt just keeps piling up. We keep borrowing more and more money. Our credit is shot. We cannot get another loan. But you know what we could do? We could go down to the appliance store and buy one of those big kettles that you fill up with oil, put on the stove, and get the oil bubbling. Skewer a turkey, lower the turkey into the boiling oil, and fry the whole turkey at once. But instead of doing it properly, we could put too much oil in that kettle. When we lower that 16-pound turkey into the kettle, which is filled to the brim with hot boiling oil, the oil would rise up and spill over the brim. It would run down the sides of the kettle, hit the fire, and ignite. So instead of transforming the turkey, we're going to transform the kitchen and collect the insurance money. That would solve our woes." If that is your aim, then use the triad that transforms kitchens. If your aim is to kill Nazis, then use the triad that transforms customers. But if your aim is to feed the community, then use the triad that transforms food. Do you understand? If you wish to accomplish an event, you must use the proper triad. If you use the wrong triad, there is no telling what you might accomplish. You can do this. You can understand this. This stuff is simple. Okay, back to page 15 of Cosmic Secrets. Let us get some understanding of the different triads. We bet that you have made a few campfires in your lifetime. All right, let's make ourselves a campfire. There it is, a nice campfire. Now, take a sheet of plywood. Everyone knows what plywood is. We will use a 4-foot sheet of plywood, one that is 3/4 of an inch thick. Hefty stuff. Okay, take that sheet of plywood and put it in the campfire like so. The plywood is standing upright, lengthwise, with 1 8-foot edge down in the fire. Question: what will happen? Answer: the plywood will burn. If we orient the three forces, fire, air, and plywood, in that configuration, the plywood will burn. One enneagram, one triad. The triad of burning plywood. Put a check mark by one of the triads at the bottom of page 15. Okay, let us see what other triads we have. We will take the same fire, the same air, and the same plywood, but this time we will put the plywood into the fire this way. The plywood is now lying flat on the fire. Question: what might happen? Answer: the fire may go out. Wait a minute. We said that plywood, fire, and air burnt the plywood. Now you're telling me that plywood, fire, and air may put the fire out? Yes. Amazing. The same forces that burnt the plywood can put the fire out, if they are oriented in a different way. Thus, you can use a sheet of plywood to put a fire out. Put a check mark by a second triad at the bottom of page 15. Who would have thought that if you wanted to put out a fire, you could use a sheet of plywood? Who would have thought? It is kind of similar to how they put out oil well fires. Do you know how they do that? What they do with oil well fires is this. First of all, in an oil well fire, you have this flame shooting up out of the ground because the oil is under pressure. When they first hit the pocket of oil, the oil starts spewing into the air. Unfortunately, there was a spark and the oil ignited. Now there is a flame shooting into the air. So what they do is put TNT on a boom, run the boom over the flame, and explode the TNT. Who would have thought that a TNT explosion could put out a fire? But it does. The massive TNT explosion consumes all the oxygen. Since there is no oxygen, there is no flame, and the fire goes out. There is now just raw crude oil shooting up out of the ground, which they quickly cap in order to prevent another fire. Who would have thought that if you wanted to put out a fire, use some TNT? So, we can reorganize the same forces and get a different result. Let's try another. There is our fire, and there is our plywood. We again put the plywood flat down on the fire. Question: what did we say might happen? Answer: the fire may go out. But this time, we stick a bellows under the edge of the plywood and start pumping air under it. Do you know what bellows are? Bellows are a simple device that are designed to furnish a strong blast of air. The earliest models consisted of a flexible bag, which had a pair of rigid boards on the side that could be expanded and contracted by opening and closing the handles. It was fitted with a valve that allowed air to fill the cavity when the handles were opened, and it forced the air out of the cavity when the handles were closed. It had many applications, primarily blowing on a blacksmith's fire to supply it with air and make it hotter. Question: with the use of bellows, what happens to the plywood? Answer: the plywood burns. Actually, what happens is the coals become so hot, they literally melt their way through the plywood. That is, the center of the plywood turns black, charcoals, and cracks, exposing it to oxygen. The center then bursts into flames, and a ring of fire works its way out, consuming the plywood. So we can again change the orientation of the forces, and we come up with a third triad. Put a check mark by a third triad at the bottom of page 15. Let's try another. We could take the plywood, the fire, and the air, and put the plywood down in the fire on its edge, like we did in the first triad. The plywood is upright, lengthwise, with its edge down in the fire. Question: if it were oriented like that, what would we expect? Answer: we would expect the plywood to burn. But this time, we blow some 200 mile per hour hurricane winds across the fire. Question: now what happens? Answer: the air would be moving too fast to support a flame. First of all, you would be lucky if you still had your plywood. Imagine the plywood fluttering away. But you were right. Even if the plywood was tied down, the air would be moving too fast to support a flame. That is why you can blow out a candle. Who would have thought that by blowing air on a fire, you could extinguish it? But if the air is moving fast enough, you can. So again, we can reorient the three forces and get a fourth result. Put a check mark by a fourth triad at the bottom of page 15. We will let you work out the other two triads on your day off. So, that is what triads are, and how they work. We repeat: if you want to kill Nazis, make sure you use the triad that transforms customers. If you want to collect insurance money, make sure you use the triad that transforms kitchens. But if you want to feed the community, make sure you use the triad that transforms food. If the latter is your aim, make sure you cook the food thoroughly, so that you do not inadvertently transform the customer. Make sure you have good safety protocols in your kitchen, fire extinguishers, and a sprinkler system, so that you do not inadvertently transform the kitchen. Truth conquers all things. Understand? If they had used the appropriate triad when they built the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, it would not have fallen down. But instead, they used the triad that transforms bridges. Cosmic Secrets, page 16. There can be seven combinations of forces, one of them incomprehensible to the human mind, since in this triad, each force occupies each place. If we cogitate on these ideas, faint parts of a buried canine start to reveal themselves. For the absolute, the three forces are united. For the universe, the three forces are separated. Could this imply that the changing of the law of three involved separating the three forces from each other? If this is true, it would also explain why separating the forces caused creation. When the three forces were separated, it must have sparked an inherent striving to re-blend. And this striving to re-blend could explain the incessant urge underlying creation. This brings us to another question. Where are the three separated forces? Separation of the three forces. The above model allows us to deduce that the first change in creation was the separation of the forces. Now, here is an interesting question. What would you get if you changed one force into three? We will tell you the answer, but the answer is going to be contrary to what the work has been teaching you for 70 years. The work taught you that there are affirming forces, denying forces, and reconciling forces, as if that is what you get if you separate one force into three. However, that is not what happens. So, grab the bottom of your seat, because what we're about to say is going to be a little hard for you to swallow. There is no such thing as a denying force. There is no such thing as a reconciling force. All forces are affirming forces. There is nobody in the model that says, I am the denying force, or I am the reconciling force. All forces are affirming forces. All forces are created equal. We can prove that to you. You get over on that side of the room and run this way. Someone else will get over on the other side of the room and run that way. When you meet, it will just be two affirming forces colliding. But based on your ages, strengths, and girths, one of you might knock the other one on their backside. As such, someone might say, this guy knocked that guy on their backside, so they were the denying force. Okay? Someone might give one of them that label, but in truth, there were no denying forces before they collided. One of them may be labeled a denying force after they collided, but by themselves, they were just affirming forces. Over the years, we watched some interesting science programs. There was one about the jungles of India. Slithering through the jungle were boa constrictors, and prowling through the jungle were tigers. If they met, a battle ensued. In one encounter, the tiger got the boa constrictor behind its head, bit its neck, and killed it. In another, the boa constrictor coiled itself around the tiger, suffocated it, and swallowed it. So which one was the denying force? Neither. They were just two affirming forces that met in the jungle. There was no denying force. However, in the event where the tiger killed the boa constrictor, the tiger was labeled the denying force. But in the event where the boa constrictor killed the boa constrictor was labeled the denying force. But innately by themselves, neither was a denying force. We repeat, all forces are created equal. All forces are affirming forces. Nobody is a denying force. Nobody is a reconciling force.
That concludes today's podcast. If you would like a chance to read the whole book, The Blueprint of Consciousness, An Accelerated Path to Awakening, which is available as a high-quality 520-page hardback, and also as a PDF download, simply visit the store at our website, thedogteachings.com. The Blueprint of Consciousness contains an objective exercise in awakening that has literally awakened hundreds of people. Be free, be awake, be real, and realize your full potential as a human being. On our website, you will be able to listen to other talks, obtain diagrams, animations, supporting videos, and much, much more. In addition, you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook under The Dog Teachings. And as a reminder, we have two Zoom classes every Saturday to assist you. Level 1 is freely available for anyone who purchases the Blueprint of Consciousness, and the other is for those who have obtained the Master Exercises and the Double or Nothing Exercises. See under Resources, Zoom Classes for more details. All at thedogteachings.com. That's THE DOGTEACHINGS.COM.
teachingngs.com. Goodbye. Until next time.